Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Looking for a new show to dive into? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like the full season of FX's epic limited series Shogun, FX's new international spy thriller The Veil, starring Emmy and Golden Globe winner Elizabeth Moss. And don't miss the all-new crime series Under the Bridge, inspired by shocking true events and starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast. On the left.
Right from your blade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
I want to get the muffs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like you're at the gun range. It's like you're an autistic kid that gets afraid whenever there's dogs barking in the neighborhood. He can hear it. He runs outside. He's got to solve a fucking mystery.
I just don't go to a lot of concerts.
And the great thing is, Melt Banana, you know where they're from?
No.
Japan.
Oh, really? Wow. All right. Welcome to the last podcast on the left, everyone. I'm Ben Kissel. That's Marcus Parks.
Hey.
How are you, Henry?
What?
Zarowski.
My back kind of hurts.
Why?
I was getting out of the bed yesterday, and I shanked it.
Whoa. You were getting out of bed, and you threw your back out.
It was just like I literally was getting out to... Natalie was coming in the door, and I was getting out to say hi, because I was laying in my own filth. I got back from the gym. I was being healthy.
Uh-huh.
I got back from the gym, and a lot of times what I'll do with the gym is strip all of my clothes off and then just lay down on the bed, just kind of spread eagle, just laying there.
Yeah,
that's what happens sometimes.
Yeah. So
and then I saw her coming in the door, and I was excited like a Labrador Retriever. I jumped up out of the bed, but guess what? I'm not made of snips and snails and puppy dog's tails. I am made out of old cigarette butts and bent cans.
Well, all right, that's fine.
A life change from one Shoko Asahara.
That's correct. All right, so we're on to part three of Shinrikyo.
Oh, yes, Shinrikyo. This episode, like last episode, we really covered the micro of what happened to Shinrikyo between 1989 and 1994. This week, we're going to go through their worldwide operations.
Ooh.
The macro, the true Cobra Command shit that they did from 1990 to 1994.
Well, this is what we talked about the last time. On the home front, Shinrikyo was getting more fucked up as it went. He was Asahara is growing in paranoia and megalomania and really starting his outreach. He's starting to realize his outreach within Japan is not enough for him.
Yeah.
He wants a deeper reach. And we'll find out later on, too, is that he was actually obsessed with Mein Kampf, and he felt that this is a part of it. He sympathized with the Nazis. That's what he said. He sympathized with Hitler and
Hitler's
stance.
Well, they were allies, yeah.
Yes, and he looked at him as a sympathetic figure and said, we need to follow in their example of world domination.
Yeah.
And that after the Harumageddon, when Shinrikyo stands alone, we will help the resurgence of the Nazi party.
And little known fact, Hitler also had a picture of him levitating, but it was his own human dookie.
Yes.
Almost like SpaceX, the way that launches with, fuel.
Yes.
It was actually human Hitler dookie.
He's like, Himmler, come here. I want you to take these two googly eyes. Take the googly eyes and put them on the top of this pile. Perfect pyramids of my perfect shit. And they'd be like, I've got to say, Hitler, that is the funniest pile of poop I've ever seen, and I'm going to take a picture of it, and I'm going to never share it with anyone because it's just too funny. It's too possibly funny to poop with googly eyes on it.
Yeah, little known fact. First use of googly eyes for humor.
For emojis.
Yeah,
for the poopoo emoji.
The first emoji was actually Hitler's shit with googly eyes.
Now, while most doomsday cults can do with just one scapegoat, the scope of Ohm's operation required dozens. Their enemies list was staggeringly long. Put Nixon's to shame.
Mm.
It included the press, the Japanese government, even rival cults, which there were quite a few in Japan. They were all trying to steal followers from each other.
Now, if only they all could have just gotten along, they would have taken over Japan and the world.
Right.
See, listen to this, cults. If you're listening to last podcast on the left, make allies with each other. Then you can win.
It was sort of against the character trait of a cult leader, though, to befriend other cult leaders.
Exactly.
There
Break
can only be
mold.
One.
Yeah. Exactly. They needed Scottie Pippen.
Right. They needed
Shinrikyo
a good assist man.
Needed a Charles Barkley. Yeah. I'm not sure.
That's right. Sure.
So at the very top of Ohm's list was an entity that people looking to justify mass murder have been using for decades now, the good old U.S. of A.
We're everybody's enemy, but they don't know that we're everybody's best friend, and that's why you must let us inside your country.
Conform.
So Asahara told followers that the reason why so many people were dying and the reason why they were all sick most of the time was because the United States was regularly spraying the compound with biochemical weapons.
Oh, you didn't think it was because they were all sitting in their own filth?
Nah.
And eat Starving. Nothing but, like, parboiled vegetables, sucking on the toes of a 300-pound man that is your leader, who's technically eating the same shit as you, but he keeps getting fatter.
Well, he wasn't eating the same nonsense that they were. He had food delivered, didn't he?
No, he literally had a driver. There was a book written by one of his drivers, Tumaru, who wrote this whole thing about how Asahara would send him on errands, and one of the errands he would do would be to several restaurants to go and get him like meat and fish and all the stuff that they weren't supposed to eat because it's against Buddhist principles, and he would eat them in a private room. He had his private area, of course it was fucking, and they should have seen how many plastic food utensils were in there just laying around like after we're done after a delivery quest.
I got three sets of silverware yesterday. $29 on Chinese food.
Nice.
Thank you so much. I just got a high five. That's the first high five in the history of last podcast.
You haven't changed.
No, I haven't.
And another thing that he would do, this is just a side note, Tamaru would also take him to karaoke rooms. Asahara loved karaoke rooms, and he would go to private rooms, and he would bring all of his lovers, like all the hottest chicks in Ohm, and his children, and they would rent these rooms, and he would pass the mic around, and they would all sing a song until finally he'd take the mic, and every single time his absolute favorite song he would sing was the Japanese version of My Way by Frank Sinatra.
Oh my God, of
and
course.
Then he would not give the mic back. He would just sing My Way
over
the rest of the
and
night.
Over?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Which, by the way, singing My Way in Japan and other various Asian countries, huge faux pas. You're not supposed to sing My Way. It's like singing Stairway to Heaven here. In fact, in the Philippines, I think it's either the Philippines or in Thailand, you will get beaten half to death if you sing My Way.
Did they know that Frank Sinatra was violently racist against the Asians?
Was he?
Oh, yes.
I mean, Frank Sinatra was violently racist against white people.
Yes, he was just a terrible person.
He was
person.
Just a terrible human being. He beat Mia Farrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mia Farrow.
Really quick side note. He broke up with a woman by sending his bodyguard up to her hotel room, and he threw a glass of wine on her. That's when he hit the bodyguard. He said, go throw the wine on the girl so she knows that we broke up.
I want one of these bodyguards. I want a bodyguard / limo driver. I want somebody to ask to do ludicrous shit.
All right, let's get back to another psychopath.
So besides the, the invented paranoia, the cult's paranoia also got a boost from the real world, as the compound was constantly besieged by family members trying to rescue those who had cut ties with them. The press, who from the very beginning knew something was up with Ohm, and finally the police, who were completely ineffective as their policy. This is Japanese policy. Was to always announce raids in advance.
Well, it's polite.
Yeah. It's a very polite society.
But also within the cult, they are being led to believe that what they're doing is completely on the books and it's completely on the level that they are fighting for peace and then everybody's attacking them.
Right.
What they don't understand, most 90% of Ohm Shinrikyo did not understand how heavily involved that other 10% were in making weapons of mass destruction and also drugs. They literally had a gigantic drug running like business to the side of it, and they're literally hanging in there being like, why are all these people bugging us all the time?
Yeah. Hmm. And thus, with attacks coming from all sides, Asahara said, the time to arm is now.
Yes.
And with millions of dollars in the bank and over 1,000 cult members living in compounds across Japan, Ohm was more than prepared to do so. Now, while most of us know about the biochemical side of things, Ohm's arsenal went well beyond poison gas. Ohm acquired a failing manufacturer called Okamura Ironworks moved every bit of machinery to a massive building 20 miles from their main compound and began manufacturing AK-47s from scratch.
Now, these weren't 10-year-old Indian kids who know how to build guns. These were 30-year-old Japanese people who up until this point have just been simple chemists or physicists.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, didn't the government realize they were gutting out this ironworks factory? I mean, that would be difficult to move. Wouldn't they need, like, mass trucks
no, they
and
just
things
went,
like that?
Yatta! Keep moving forward, spirit of enlightenment!
They used a spell?
Yatta! No, they were all just super excited, being like, yes, move forward, expansion, reach to the stars. If you do not reach to the stars, then you will never become an astronaut, young Asahara. And he's just like, yeah. Thank you.
So the power of ambition gutted out the ironworks.
Just
the
you can do it nature of the Japanese.
We lost that in this country, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. We slowly bred it out of us using the Trilateral Commission's use of rigorous schooling and also fluoride in the water.
Yeah, but we're still doing it. America's number one export, entertainment.
There we go.
That's all we got left.
Perfect.
So the ultimate goal of the AK-47 factory was to have 1,000 rifles and 1 million bullets by 1995, enough to arm every man, woman, and child on their various compounds across Japan.
Now, with kids, you just can wrap them up in bullets.
Send them in there.
Yeah.
It was estimated that eventually the project would have cost over $10 million, but to Ohm, whose assets at the time of the purchase were worth well over $200 million, this was a drop in the bucket.
Now, you know what? It's also a really effective way to use a child as a weapon. What you do is you strap a bunch of, you know how you can take out the grenades, you can pull the pins,
right.
And then you can strap the thing so you can like hold the thing, the lever
grenade.
Thingy do,
yeah, sure.
The thing you do so it doesn't blow up.
The pin.
Take a bunch
the
of
latch.
Those. Yeah, the latch. Take a bunch of those, you pop them, right? You hold the latch with duct tape, tape it all over the inside of the kid's clothes, right? Go up to, right. Have the kid run up to the American embassy, be like, please come help, please help. And he's just like, what? And he's just like, I have Rashenberry. And they're like, oh, young Japanese boy, we have to help. We're the U.S. embassy. All we do is help.
I don't know if they help with rashes on bellies. They're not
what they do is they think that that's code for this kid wants them to fuck him. Right?
Oh, I see.
Because they're the government. They take the kid into the building. They go to erotically strip its clothes off of it. Boom!
So that's a suicide bomber.
Yes.
Yeah.
But using pedophilia against them.
I don't know, but I think you're inferring the pedophilia, definitely confirming we have a suicide bombing child.
Look at the numbers. Follow the money.
Yes. Dennis Hastert, for example. The latest senator to fall.
Oh, yeah. We'll cover Dennis Hastert in the future. Now, in addition to their attempts at AKs, Ohm Shinrikyo would develop literal tons of chemical weapons, build a functioning railgun, as well as a few functioning lasers, and manufacture thousands of pounds of TNT. These guys were on the fucking level.
Yeah.
Well, this is when it truly gets actually frightening.
Yeah.
This is what we were talking about last episode about where Ohm Shinrikyo was legitimately one of the most dangerous forces in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they were coming, because they had the independent thought, they had the mind to put all of this shit together. And then this is another thing that's really interesting is that in the book Destroying the World to Save It, they have a really interesting concept about how megalomania and how dangerous that is in this scenario. A lot of times in megalomania, you see people that are deeply suffering they're deep in the suffering of schizophrenia,
right.
And they believe there's gigantic illusions and stuff like that. Is that Asahara was literally suffering from a version of that, but had access to millions of dollars and thousands of people willing to do his nonsense wills.
Just Kim Jong-un, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's in addition to a head full of acid.
Yes, and so...
Oh, my God, a rail gun when you're on acid? sign me up for the cult immediately.
Me and my brother's gonna fucking YouTube it.
Oh, man.
You gotta YouTube it. But he came out, and one thing they said that's really interesting is about how the an atomic bomb, which is Asahara's main goal, is such a... Should I wait?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the big reveal.
You got it.
Yeah. So get back, but start talking about the other
stuff. You got to YouTube it. You can just go for it.
Yeah. But no. But this is when you bring in all of the other weird inventions.
Yes. But what Asahara would do, he had this concept called the Mahamudra, which was this, which I think I brought up last time, which idea that a guru has become so enlightened that sometimes he gives a confusing command on purpose just to see how dedicated you are to him, is that you won't question him. So one thing he would do...
Well, that was the 1,000, whatever, hit your head on the floor 1,000 times,
It's all the bullshit. Yeah. And so what he did, so he is his head science officer, a man named Murai, who was his second in command. He was his, a devoted, devoted human being. And one thing he would turn to him, he's like, I want you to make me a metal that's lighter than air. And he's like, absolutely, guru, we can do it. Mm-hmm. And he just says he could do it, and they just go off and they go work on it a bunch. And then when he doesn't do it right, he just prostrates himself in front of the guru, and then it's just more about the idea that he went to go do it. So what Asahara came, one thing he came forward and asked for is that he said, I want a floating chair. He said, I want to harness the gravity of the sun, and I want to use that in order to levitate more easily than I'd normally have to do flexing my powerful leg muscles.
See, there's a movie about that.
Yes.
The man put the balloons on the chair.
Up.
Yeah. No, not up. That's the house. There's a movie where a man sits on a chair
it's
and he puts blue.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's right. He died.
He's gone. Yeah,
it was
dumb. Don't do it.
It was dumb.
Yeah, dumb thing to do. Yeah.
So Murai took the command. He said, "Okay, we will go work on it." And he comes back to Asahara a couple weeks later, and he's like, "Okay, we can do it." But the problem is, the chair will spin so fast it will make people sick.
Oh, that's a kind of a fun ride for a carnival.
and then Asahara said, "Like, yeah, forget about it.
Yeah. You know what? Actually, that's cool. It's cool." Thanks.
Nice.
So they had all that goofy shit. They had all of the truly dangerous stuff, like the TNT, the chemical weapons, the AK-47s. But the one thing the Ohm wanted above all else was a nuclear bomb.
Get in line.
Yeah, right.
And luckily for them, the number one producer of atomic weapons was collapsing just across the ocean for Shoko Asahara, and Ohm Shinrikyo would find a second home in Russia just as the USSR was collapsing.
I just love the idea that Russia had a fire sale. And it was, everything must go. What do you have? All they had was nukes.
Just everything's glowing with radiation.
Yeah. Is like, oh, my best salesman is Korsk here. And Korsk, tell them how are. He's like, no, son, I am 47 years old, but I look like I am 9 years old. And that is because of radiation from Chernobyl. But what we'll say, we have got quite a sale going on. Is like, we can get 2 atomic bombs for up to 40,000 Korshkas.
Wow.
And what exactly is a Korshkas, young George? It is a salt cube. Oh, how I yearn for salt.
Yeah, they do need salt over there.
They do.
Bad food.
So Asahara's arrival in Russia could not have been timed more perfectly. Just as the Emperor of Japan abdicating his godhood after World War II created a spiritual vacuum in Japan, so too did the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991. And not only that, but the Soviet school system was very similar to Japan's, filled with rote memorization that discouraged any critical thinking whatsoever. However, Russia was ripe for the taking, and Asahara planned to take it. Now, in what would be the first of many sold-out appearances in Russia's largest covered arena, Asahara, and this was kind of his Trojan horse. This was his way into the hearts of the Russian people. Mm-hmm. He would sit on a chair in a bare field as video screens flashed pictures of him as Christ crucified. And after that went on for a while, Asahara would give a rambling speech on yoga and kundalini before leading everyone in a mass meditation ritual. And one academic described the scene as, quote,
an awe-inspiring, overwhelming experience in the state of mass hypnosis.
Well, it's a lot more serious than that.
An awe-inspiring, overwhelming experience in the state of mass hypnosis.
Yeah, man, it sounds like when we took psychotics and went to go see the Flaming Lips. That sounds awesome.
It does sound pretty fucking rad. So you mean to say he was somewhere between Marilyn Manson and Gwyneth Paltrow?
Yeah, something like that.
But also E. Honda.
Ooh, E. Honda.
That's him in one go.
Don't even get me started. For those that don't know, E. Honda could flap his hands all fast. You get your enemy in the corner, they can't move.
So these spectacles would happen every time Asahara would visit Russia over the next few years, until finally some Russian prankster let loose a pack of feral stray dogs into the crowd and just ruined the whole thing for everyone.
You would be surprised how many group experiences are ruined in Russia by someone unleashing a pack of dogs.
When the Russians had the Olympics, there was a bunch of stray dogs, feral stray dogs. What's wrong with the Russians and the dogs? How's the dogs?
It just seems like everybody was raising attack dogs, and then everybody ran out of meat at the same time.
Release the dogs.
But while new followers, and especially the new money, was very nice, Asahara was much more interested in Russia's rogue scientists. See, scientists in Soviet Russia, especially those involved in military applications, were among the USSR's upper crust. Exalted individuals they wanted for nothing, and they enjoyed privileges that the proletariat could only dream of.
Like salt.
Yeah, and bread.
And shoes.
Really just soup. I mean,
they had a full sink.
Wow.
Each apartment, each government cube that was given to them had a full sink.
Well, the worst thing about a half sink, it's just difficult for you to have no sink.
But in whatever apartment you are, the sink also doubles as a toilet.
Oh, that's kind of nice.
But when the Soviet Union collapsed, suddenly there were hundreds of scientists, hundreds if not thousands of scientists, with a vast knowledge of both chemical and nuclear warfare out of a job, and Shoko Asahara was right there to offer them one. See, by the end of 1994, Om Shinrikyo had a membership of over 30,000 in Russia, three times their membership in Japan. And recruiting scientists with nuclear know-how, very easy to do.
They're whores.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, these guys, they have one marketable skill.
Exactly.
Their families are starving. They have one skill, and
it just happens to be creating weapons of mass destruction and death.
Yeah, and they're totally fine with it. But yeah. Sam Nunn, one of the U.S. Senate's top defense experts, this is what he said about that.
Literally thousands of nuclear scientists do not know how they're going to provide adequately for their families. But they certainly know how to make nuclear weapons.
Oh, that's refreshing. That's very reassuring. Nothing like a nuclear scientist with nothing to lose.
Okay. Good God. Baby is crying. Where is Marshka? Marshka, where? I guess I'm just little happens, and now you're a stay at home dad. I guess I will just sit around. Okay, what? Good. Baby, you cry. What do I do? Dip you in cooling liquid. Oh, that's all you need. I just make the noise. You're like, oh, look at this. All, this did nothing for the shit on you.
No. That's sad.
My sister is the best gift giver I've ever met of any person. It's Jackie Zabrowski. She shops all year thinking about her family and friends and puts little things aside for their birthdays and Christmases. I have no idea how she does it. I don't know how she do it, but guess what? She always wins Mother's Day, but not this year. I'm coming back. Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? I'm taking the crown. All right, give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. I mean this. We have the Aura frame up in my home. We absolutely love it. I can put photos on it very, very easily through the app. It's fun to do, and the memories keep cycling, and I get emotional, and we filled it with pictures of Carmi and Wendy, and that is not sad. That is celebratory, so you should try it. It's honestly a really good product. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off, plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code LEFT at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Finding work-life balance can be tough, but Squarespace gives you the tools to reach your goals and have time to celebrate. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. With the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, you can select from curated layout and styling options to create a personalized website optimized for every device. Get your website discovered fast with integrated, optimized SEO tools. Plus, make checkout easy for customers with easy-to-use payment tools. And with Squarespace AI, you can explain what your site is about, choose your tone, enter what you need, and get auto-generated text. And that helps you save time. I know I'm sitting on about two literal wheelbarrows filled with horse pics. Now, part of the issue has been is a lot of these pictures are getting stopped at customs because some of them do depict various world leaders in horse-like circumstances that seems to be pinging a lot of these custom agents' accounts. Now, so what I've done to do is like, so while I'm trying to work on hand smuggling these horse pics over various country borders, I then also have time, because Squarespace is doing all the other ad work for me, to go and work on my killdozer at home. So thank you, Squarespace, for allowing me to diversify in the best way possible for this country. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial when you're ready to launch. Go to squarespace.com/left to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It says here I have to talk about something I need to get off my chest, and I guess I can share it here. I eat mayonnaise for fun. It's a hobby of mine, and it's an addiction. And it's a daily weight on my life, how much I need whipped egg whites and oil crammed into my veins as soon as I wake up. And a lot of people carry around a lot of different stressors, big and small. Some people are presidents. Some people are soldiers. Some people have to eat mayonnaise, especially with hard-boiled eggs, which is what I eat for lunch. But I guess I should share that in therapy, because therapy is a safe place to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And what I do is I just add eggs if I have mayonnaise left over. I just continue to add the eggs. But if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. I hope they can help me. My God. I hope they can help me. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/lastpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp. HELP.com/lastpod.
So Kia Hide Hayawaka, Asahara's right-hand man, took no less than 8 trips to Russia in 1994.
Also, this is just one of Asahara's right-hand man, but I do feel like Asahara did this quite a bit. I think he did the Jack Palance,
right.
You are my number one guy.
Like, 3 times. And he would do it every single time. When the last one died, you got to be that one, but he also said it to 2 other guys in the other room, literally just before he said it to you.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, this guy's notes from his trips to Russia, they include numerous references to nuclear warheads, with one page listing several different prices for various nuclear weapons. Hmm. The lowest price, $15 million, which was, again, to somebody whose coffers hundreds of millions of dollars, pocket change to Om Shinrikyo. And while the likelihood of Om smuggling an actual nuclear bomb from Russia to Japan is admittedly low, it is not too far-fetched to assume that they could have at least smuggled enough plutonium in to create a dirty bomb.
Sure. I mean, you can put anything in your rectum.
You can put anything in your rectum up to the size of a baguette.
Yes. So a couple of trips, that's all. I mean, how much plutonium do you need? 3 baguettes worth.
How much plutonium is a lot of plutonium?
I feel like a little plutonium is a lot of plutonium.
That's what I thought, is that you don't need that much to make an atomic bomb, right? I don't know.
No.
I am somewhat lacking in terms of my knowledge of nuclear science.
Sure.
So when detonated, a dirty bomb creates a radioactive mist that embeds itself in the environment for literally thousands of years, rendering it a deadly wasteland for centuries to come.
I'm just going to put a little bracket in there for joke concerning Kissel's bathroom.
Oh, okay, good. I like that joke. It's kind of funny.
Even a small dirty bomb would render half of Tokyo completely uninhabitable for hundreds of years, and Asahara was well on his way to obtaining both the components and the knowledge necessary to make it happen. He was this close. He was maybe 6-8 months away.
Yes, and Marcus, maybe about a half inch.
About half,
a half inch close.
Half, half inch, because that's what he was doing. Yeah, a cunt hair. It was cunt hair up.
Oh, I see.
Well, depending on the cunt.
We'll call it a vaginal follicle.
I don't like it. I think vaginal follicle is worse than cunt hair.
Well, for my purposes, I have to say vaginal follicle.
How often do you say it on Fox?
Oh, so much. So much.
Now, Russia would also net the cult one of their most terrifying weapons of all through the former Soviet state of Azerbaijan. And this was a very common thing in the post-Soviet years, because all of a sudden you have all of these Soviet states that are suddenly independent nations with right. no idea how to govern themselves.
But also in need of cash.
In need of a lot right. of cash.
Desperately. And so they have all of this shit, and it's like, we literally need to buy food. And so we can just sell off these reserves. We have all of this shit. We have weapons yeah. just hanging around, like literally anti, because Russia was very good at giving everybody weapons yeah. before it was, when it was the USSR, everybody got weapons just to be like, just in case any one of us has got to kill everybody, here, you're set.
You got a weapon.
So Ohm was able to buy for, actually, this is kind of a low price. They paid $700,000 for an Mi-17 military-class helicopter
yeah.
capable of being equipped with 128 rockets, 4 Scorpion Jesus. Anti-tank missiles, and a 12.7-millimeter gun mounted on the nose.
It sounds like a great time.
It's
I just have
I mean,
to
it does,
say.
It sounds like a fucking awesome time. Yeah.
8 months to get in a nuke. They have a helicopter. I mean, a head full of acid. Holy holy hell.
This is my question, though. What was the interior like?
Well, I mean, I'm sure it's very nice. A good military
it's an
interior.
Isotoner? Isotoner leather is you what could, you want.
Yeah. We can put the leather in.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, fine. So no features?
I'll give you guys one guess where Asahara sent his pilots to train for their terroristic exercise.
Florida.
Florida!
Oh my God! What is with Florida? Terrorists are like, we want to blow up the United States, we want to blow up our homelands, but let's do it in the comforts under the sun. Let's do it in the orange state.
Were you guys talking about like planning some sort of like massive terrorist attack? Because you should come down to me near Punxsutawney flight school. I got like 5 helicopters, and I mostly teach things up like.
Yeah.
How to kill things from the sky.
Yeah, I'm not convinced Florida doesn't have a secret tourism campaign going on for terrorists.
Yeah, there's an anti-American sleeper cell in Florida, which, yeah. I mean, come on. I mean, if you guys, if, in case you're not getting, putting two and two together, Florida was where the 9/11 hijackers yes. were trained.
I bet it's run by an alligator with an eye patch and right. 2 parrots.
He doesn't even care. He's cold-blooded.
No, even though the weapon capabilities of the helicopter were impressive, Ohm's main goal for the helicopter, which, by the way, easily passed through Japanese customs. They just waved it on through.
So they're like, pineapple, bizarre mango, helicopter, pineapple.
No, I can't bring this frog in there.
No, this is an endangered frog, ma'am. Arrest her?
So Ohm's main goal for the helicopter was to fit it with a spraying mechanism filled with poison gas, spray it over Tokyo, and easily wipe out half the city.
This came from a vision he had. This is about time. Like, while he was ramping up the, while the Harumageddon temperature was rising and the pressure was rising on the outside of Ohm Shinrikyo, he began this concept of saying 70 tons, and he would yell out 70 tons, and no one knew in within the 90%, again, that don't know what's going on, what he was talking about. What he was talking about was 70 tons of sarin gas.
Mm. Yeah, and because of Ohm's vast contacts with former military scientists, the cult would also return from Russia with the Soviet recipe for sarin gas, which, by the way, that recipe originally developed by, you guessed it, Nazis.
No.
Nice.
You know what? The Nazis, a lot came out of that.
They
did so much. God damn,
hard
they were
work.
They were kind of like Lemonhead Perry. What's the name of that blues man that like Mick Jagger and Chuck Berry loved?
We'll call him Lemonhead Perry.
His name was like Toe Pants Johnson.
Lead Belly.
Yes. They always have the names Nazi, like that.
So you're equating Lead Belly to the Nazis yeah. because they both worked hard.
Well, they were
so like LeBron James is a Nazi,
or maybe Robert Johnson. Are you thinking of Robert Johnson?
Source. Oh, he one lost of those his guys. One of those blues men that. All the white guys stole from.
Yeah. Muddy Waters, Robert Johnson, Howlin' Wolf.
How's the Nazis?
They're the Nazis. I see.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, you're saying like Muddy Waters was like the Heinrich Himmler of American
yes.
music.
Yes. No. If you want to compare American music to the development of weapons of mass destruction.
Sure. Okay.
And I do. So, sarin gas It is among the most effective and popular of the gases used in chemical warfare. For example, the Iraqis, Saddam Hussein was a big fan of sarin gas in the late 80s, early 90s. Now, the infection begins with a runny nose, drooling, and a tightness of the chest. The victim's vision is then narrowed down to a pinpoint, effectively blinding them. That's followed by muscle spasms, excessive sweating, and uncontrolled defecation and urination. Next come the convulsions.
Don't giggle.
It is kind
of
funny.
Don't you giggle. Well, I mean, you just giggle.
No, I know, because they're just like... I'd be like, bro, you are shitting yourself. You are like pooping
man,
a lot.
Bro, listen, man. No, this is Becky's birthday party, man. You're ruining this for me, man. Wait a second. I'm kind of like, you eat those tacos same as...
Yeah, it is always funny when people have uncontrollable bowels.
Yes.
After the uncontrollable bowels come convulsions, coma, then eventually death, with survivors often suffering permanent nerve damage.
I thought you were going to say embarrassment.
Yes, literally. Yeah, death by embarrassment.
I honestly would be embarrassed. Like, that is a fear, like having a medical breakdown and if you would defecate yourself in public.
Yeah, you defecate and urinate yourself, and then you just start shaking it all over the place.
Like that hippo who got out of the pool. This is one of the greatest YouTube videos. Have you ever seen that? If you haven't, YouTube hippo farting, then you'll love the video.
I just imagine a shit-covered fucking convulsing dance just called the Somalian twist.
Yeah. It's very unique to your culture, huh?
Come on, man.
Let's do the shits.
Now, under the right weather... Now, under the right weather conditions, which is ironically the right weather conditions for a sarin gas attack, the end of a sunny, clear day, a 500-pound sarin bomb could easily wipe out half of Washington, D.C., and as Henry said, Ohm's goal was 70 tons.
Now, the idea was to mimic a biblical disaster. That's what it was. It fit with his brand. It fit with this idea of being like, we will rain death from the skies. People will not understand what is happening, and they will assume it's a godlike motion. And then once, like, so first it will appear to be a biblical disaster, and then it will appear to be a gigantic chemical weapons attack, and then that will be blamed upon the United States of America.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's putting all his chips on the U.S. being blamed on this, despite Japan being one of our closest allies in the late 90s.
And if you want to compare this to the Charles Manson race war concept, which was such a small concept. There's another thing, interesting from this book. They were talking about, it's like Manson was saying like, but Manson's idea was just like, oh, guns and knives.
Right.
Yeah. Like, yeah, there'd be
fighting. And dune buggies,
It would be like warriors. It would be kind of fighting in the streets. But Asahara's vision of the end times was so epic. And then because he had the cash flow to make it happen, it's, again, he was probably the most dangerous person in America.
Yeah, because...
The most dangerous person in the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sounds like it.
Because Manson's whole thing was just all about telling a lie to get all the chicks out to the desert because he liked living in the desert.
He liked fingering chicks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't the end game for him. Like, the whole Helter Skelter thing, that was just him riding the wave. That was like a side game. That was just a lie because he was a petty criminal, a bit of a megalomaniac. He did enjoy the attention. He did enjoy, like, the Christ-like vision that people had of him. But Asahara, the sex was a side effect. The sex was, like, that was just a bonus to him.
I was reading about, too, he was also barely coming. He was still believing in the idea of transferring your energy upwards. So he would take the hottest females from Ohm into his room, and he'd go like, no.
Yeah.
You know, like pull him off just before he fucked and go,
well, I like that, though.
We talked about it last time.
But at least he was living up to his own standard to some degree.
To some degree,
that's not so bad.
I mean, no one else was allowed to have
any sex at all.
But yeah. So Asahara was a truly dangerous man. This was actually a goal. He was going to go through with this. Because of all the acid, the visions that he saw, he believed his own bullshit. What started off as a scam to sell, like, energy drinks to idiots, ended up, he believed his own press.
Absolutely. Well, he was truly mentally ill.
Yeah.
And then the constant acid and the isolation and the creating of a whole group of people that idolize you begin to believe in the fantasy. That is a part of the self con man, that you con yourself into becoming the guru position, and then there's no coming back.
And don't you constantly have to have give them something to do? You constantly have to be evolving, otherwise it dies, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because you have that, we talked about that in the last episode with that manic energy that they have, that they have to keep up, because you got to keep this train moving forward. If it slows down even a little bit, and he found that in the late 80s, early 90s, when he tried to run for office, the train started to slow down. And anytime, he has seen again and again that anytime the train slows down, a shitload of people get off.
Right,
think of about course. How upset you get when you aren't getting commercial auditions for a week.
Oh, my. Livid.
Yeah, it's the same shit. Which, like Robert J. Lifton said in this book, was really interesting too, is about the push and pull of the guru believing that he's the guru and also his self-doubt, and the cult's belief in the guru and their doubt of him, and how that push-pull makes it really... Once you get nuclear weapons involved in that, it gets very, very dangerous.
Yeah.
One story that he said, I would say real quick, is that Asahara was confronted by one of the renunciants wanting to stop being a devotee because he fell in love with another chick in Om. Murai turned to him and said, you know what he should do as punishment? Is that he should eat her shit. He should eat her shit and see how he feels after he tastes her shit. And Asahara was like, that's insane. No way. 2 weeks later, Asahara walks in, literally turns to the guy, and he's like, I've come up with your punishment. You will eat her shit.
What if he
and
loved
literally
it?
They went and ate. He ate her shit in front of everybody.
In that another time, another
young Sapien never denies eating shit.
It's like, oh, master always chooses me to eat shit, and what do? Oh, I eat shit with much alacrity.
I mean, did she shit knowing that it was going to be eaten, or did somebody have to?
Yeah,
secretly
she told. They told
it?
Her to shit on a plate, and then they ate it.
You'd think a plate.
Yeah, I'm
picturing a bowl. Either that.
A bowl?
Yeah, I'm thinking a bowl. Either that or somebody waited until she went to the outhouse and they snuck up behind with the bucket and they caught it.
Oh, she was in the
great
cult
trick.
As well.
Yeah, she was. Oh, yeah, yeah. She was in the cult as well. Yeah, all these people are in the cult together. It also happened where another guy, a different guy, told Asahara, hey, I've fallen in love with this woman. I want to marry her. We want to leave. We, you know, we believe in the guru's love, but we believe in our love more.
Whoa, buddy.
He dunked them in boiling water and then hung them upside down for a day.
It's called the heat test.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. That was boiling water was a big part of Om Shinrikyo.
Yeah, he was boiling. He was legitimately boiling the karma out of you like everybody was a wonton, but also that's how Asahara saw everything in piles of wontons.
Why wouldn't he? That's how I see everything, too. I can't stop thinking about those ducks that you can see, deep-fried ducks. Kind of fun. So they died when they were boiled in water.
No.
Oh, they lived.
Some of them did. The old people usually died.
Yeah.
Because there was...
Weak!
there was no age limit on the boiling water.
I see. Okay.
So the bio lab where the sarin gas was produced, which they called Satyon 7, straight out of a fucking comic book. After entering a nondescript warehouse and navigating a series of narrow corridors, one eventually came to a large mezzanine with a giant golden statue of Shiva, the god of destruction, sitting in the middle. And hidden above Shiva was the so-called Room of Genesis, where scientists worked on various chemical agents, which they gave cute little nicknames like Magic, Witch, or Sally.
It sounds like fucking like they were making Molly. Yeah.
Man, it sounds like My Little Pony names.
Oh, Satyon 7? It was affectionately nicknamed The Wizard.
It's fucking so awesome, dude.
Little callback.
Yeah, the mountain wizards.
Yeah, he brings it back. So it's like, we always got to go back to the wizards. They're like, high-five each other. We're like, yeah, no.
I almost forgot that they are just a bunch of nerds at the end of the day.
You forget. Yeah. That's the problem with nerds is that once they start taking themselves seriously, they become
nuclear superpowers.
Yeah.
Now, to test the sarin after it had been completed and purified, Om traveled to Australia, bought a ranch called Banjuan Station, acquired a 29-strong flock of sheep, tethered the sheep to the ground in a semicircle and exposed the sheep to a cloud of sarin gas that they had developed themselves from the Russian by way of the Nazis' recipe.
Wow.
So what are y'all going to do with these sheep? Come on down here to my sheep farm. What are y'all do with them?
Oh, most respectful young Australian. What we plan to do is nerve gas them to death and experiment to see what the nerve gas will do to humankind.
All right, well, I guess that's about as good as anything. I was going to fuck them.
Australians have a fun way of talking.
All 29 sheep died.
It was good. Good batch.
The
good
cult batch. Finally developed their first successful weapon after trying to use botulism, after trying to use anthrax. We didn't even go through that. Their nice little foray into the world of anthrax, Jesus. They couldn't quite develop either because, you know, as we said in the last episode, biological weapons are very, very difficult.
So get off their back.
No, I mean, I'm not judging them. I'm just, they're trying.
They're trying real hard, and they tried hard enough to develop sarin gas. And Ohm could not wait to use it and unleashed their first sarin gas attack in the town of Matsumoto on June 28th, 1994. Mm. The attacks on the trains, that was not their first deadly attack. That was not their first attempt by far. The Tokyo attacks, I think, were their, look, what, fifth or sixth attempt?
Yeah.
And the Matsumoto incident, as it is referred to, was their first deadly attack.
You know, I just feel bad for the sheep. I've been this entire time. I can't stop thinking about the sheep.
I'm talking about them murdering people, and you can't stop thinking about the sheep.
People are mean. Some they've been mean to me.
Yeah, and you know
and
what?
A sheep never
sheep
has
sheep doesn't know what's happening. No,
it does know what's happening. It just wants to be shaved and worn to keep us warm.
You know what, Ben? You know who had that same opinion?
Who did?
Shoko Asahara. Well, no, I'm completely serious.
Yeah. He felt sad about the sheep.
He felt so bad about the sheep because his whole thing was karma. And, of course, the karma things that you could gain good karma from murdering somebody because you're releasing them from this world, saving them from hell. But animals... Killing animals was nothing. Like
this
you could
already
you could,
their heaven.
Yeah, they already fit into the. Technically, the sheep farm was their heaven.
It was, yeah, and they were just having a little sheep day, going about their sheep lives.
But technically, it all fit back into his Poa philosophy. The idea of that you're killing the thing to release its karma. You're doing because you're working towards a higher end. Everything's explained.
Okay.
Yeah. So people in Japan, understandably. Didn't really like having Ohm Shinrikyo around.
What are you talking about? They're just stinky. They're really loud. You see flashing lights coming out of it that are legitimately laser tests. Uh-huh. You wonder what's happening in there. You know what I mean? Like, oh, you don't know. They're fine. Yeah, they're kind of fun neighbors, right?
I think suicide death cults can be beneficial to a community.
You think so? Think they're going to raise property values up?
Well, you know
I don't know about that.
You know that once they're all dead... Those buildings are going to be a lot cheaper.
Right. He's creating jobs. Think about that.
And so people, regular folks, they went to great lengths to remove Ohm Shinrikyo from their immediate vicinity. Because Ohm, by the mid-90s, they were a known quantity in Japan. Ohm Shinrikyo was a thing. And anytime you saw Ohm Shinrikyo cultists moving into your area, it was time to use the law to its fullest extent to keep them the fuck out.
Right.
They were just as visible as Scientology.
Yeah.
They were not as technically legit as Scientology only because we haven't, like, there wasn't a lot of celebrities that were involved, like, in Scientology. Scientology's they're trying to make it more normal.
Yeah, it was Scientology in its early days before they got, like, Traw and, you know, Tom Cruise and all that.
Traw? What you call him
now? What I call John. Yeah, John Traw. You don't listen to Page 7?
I love Page 7, and I listen to it every week. I must have just missed that.
Yeah, oh, you missed Jontron?
Jontron.
It's like the Jontron. It's the center of Page 7. That's it. Everything revolves around Jontron.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Go listen to Page 7, me and Jackie Zabrowski, which Henry is going to be guesting on here in the next few weeks.
Very good.
And I'll be fabulous on it.
Welcome to the slumber party,
yay.
Henry.
But Ohm Shinrikyo was like the super, super weird version of that. But everybody knew them because they were in newspapers. Asahara was always on television because he'd brought on as a gag.
But Scientologists just want to make great Hollywood movies. They don't want to invest in nuclear weaponry.
Well, they do want to make a gang of the straightest men who've ever been straight.
Yeah, that's right.
No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key. All those emails, reports, and presentations are equally important to the collaboration needed to get things done. Grammarly can help. Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. And isn't that what matters most? Better writing means a stronger impact. Grammarly works across 500,000 apps and websites. You can't escape it. Like the ever-pervasive octopus of malice that is the NSA. Grammarly is watching your every move, making sure that you're doing it right. Data privacy and security are woven into the foundation of Grammarly, into the very essence of its nature. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner, and it helps your team make their point and move faster, because that's the key there. Work smarter, not harder. Yes, Grammarly. You know how many times it saves me from writing a long, rambling, one-sentence email at 4 o'clock in the morning to my beloved employees? Makes me sound like someone who doesn't just have a BA in theater. All right, I was taught how to be a tree. I was not taught how to survive as an adult. All right, my job was to cry in front of a weird Southern man who just told me all sorts of weird stuff about my body. I didn't learn how to write. So thank you, Grammarly, because you're making me the boss I gotta be to motivate my team to get out there. And, oh, man, you don't want to mess with them. Thanks, Grammarly. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors. It's a waste. Don't waste hours on apps. Besides appetizers, that's the kind of apps I like. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Did you know that empanada is already Spanish? I didn't. Thanks, Babbel. Did you know that burrito is already Spanish? Wow! I just got to learn all the rest. And eventually, I'm going to be eating downtown Mexico. Thanks, Babbel. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at Babbel.com/left. Get up to 60% off at Babbel.com/left, spelled Babbel.com/left. Rules and restrictions may apply.
So one particular land dispute, as the Aum Shinrikyo cult was moving into the town of Matsumoto, it's about a town of about like 200,000, that would not end in a lawsuit, as they usually did, but in mass murder. Now, Aum, seeking to murder the 3 judges that were about to rule against them in this land dispute case, Aum brought back their old car exhaust plan that they borrowed from the CIA, but they now had gas that actually worked, and they knew that it worked. And the attack, from the beginning, bit of a comedy of errors. Kind of seemed destined to fail. So first, the head of the operation overslept on the big day.
Oh, God, I gotta wake up. Normally, the rat that nibbles on my toes does this a lot earlier. What's going on? Oh, maybe I woke up early. It's 12:30. When you wake up in the morning, he's putting on sunglasses. Yep, he's putting on a denim jacket. And now I'll be all right.
It's all right.
Sees the bus pull away.
Yoinks!
Oh, no.
And the van that they were going to use, they had to load it up. In order to do these gas attacks, they needed hundreds of pounds of equipment. And they also had 5 cultists in this van. And because they had so much weight in it, they couldn't muster enough power to go over 30 miles per hour.
It is funny. It is actually.
But the thing about this, these bumbling assholes with this big junky van that's only, it is filled with toxic gas.
Right.
That if they fuck up, like even they would have been way more dangerous if they just fucked up.
Yeah, if they just
and
hit
just
something.
Like hit something, and then that would have killed everybody. Literally thousands of people would have been dead.
Terrifying to think about.
Oh no. Well, they had to wait until they got there. They had to do a chemical reaction once they got there. Yes. And that was another comedy. That was another error that they made. So the cultists finally arrived in Matsumoto around 9 p.m. and they picked a supermarket parking lot as the perfect spot to hit the judge's dormitory, because of course they're depending on sarin gas and chemical warfare and all this. It all depends on the wind direction. Mm-hmm. Like that's what, if you want it to go a certain way, then you've got to release it from a certain location.
Get fans.
Yeah, that would work.
But when they started the chemical reaction, they botched the formula and their van filled with a thick white smoke, hydrogen chloride.
Oh my god.
In addition to releasing the deadly gas. In fact, like one like junior high kid that was taking out the trash next to the supermarket, he said that he saw the van. He just saw it suddenly fill up with gas. He said he heard a lot of muffled voices from inside.
You know what I'm doing? I don't even know what I'm doing. In the morning and I'll be all right.
But since the
screech comes running out of there.
Whoa, guys.
So the thing is about the wind direction is if the wind was, I think it was, say the wind was blowing from the east, then they would have parked on one side of the dormitory where the judges were staying. If it was blowing from, and they would be able to just get the judge's dormitory and that's all. But since it was blowing from the west, they had to park in this supermarket parking lot, and the sarin gas would have to pass through an apartment block full of hundreds of people. And they, you know what they said? Yeah, fuck it. These are all just casualties in a greater war.
We're releasing them. We're doing good for them.
Yeah, we're releasing them. We're doing good for them. But luckily for all those people, the wind changed direction at the last minute. As they were releasing the gas, the wind changed direction to a much less populated area. 8 people still died.
Oh.
And another 150 suffered serious neurological injuries, but it could have been so much worse. Either way, though, the plan actually worked. The judges were among the injured, and Ohm got out of the lawsuit. And emboldened by a somewhat successful military action, Asahara decided it was finally time to start training ground troops.
There you go. I can't stop thinking about, the sarin gas going through an apartment building and then the apartment building just filling with shit. Popping out of the windows and be like, I think we got him.
Oh, yeah. It's a real chutes and ladders party.
Look at that.
Now, as far as the ground troops go, Asahara's first idea was to father a squadron of children with his more comely followers and raise them as a team of child assassins.
Playing the long game there.
Well, that's the problem. Well, Armageddon, time sensitive, coming up real fast. Because so that wasn't a workable plan.
Because what he's doing now is, again, he's ramping up the speech. We got to figure out, we got to give ourselves a timeline here. He's like, 1997. That's when the end times are coming. We got to ramp up to 97. And he was like literally doing this. So while he was, for a while, he was fucking them, trying to put babies in them.
Yeah. And he was, and he got this plan around like 1990. And when I say he wanted a squadron of children, I mean like literally 5, 6, 7-year-old kids.
Yes.
So if Armageddon was in 1997, then they're all going to be good, baked, and ready to go by the time it comes.
Yeah, and all you got to do, again, what you got to do with these kids, you put bombs in their shoes, you teach them how to do bows and arrows, and then you just toss them at people.
No, just get a suicide bomber.
Ninjas. No, he was training child ninjas.
Children can't be quiet.
Yeah, try to see what happens, right, to get a child to run across a bunch of rice paper and see what happens.
You kidding me?
So, but that's the problem, is that Armageddon kept getting moved up. And so by the time Armageddon was coming in 1995, Asahara opted to train his own paramilitary force made up of current and former members of Japan's 1st Airborne Division that he called the Soldiers of White Love.
Now remember, the rest of
he's getting pretty hip.
Yeah, it is pretty sweet.
I mean, well, he's doing, that is such a fucking acid name. It's like, man.
He was high as fuck.
He was
right.
He was high as fuck, calling them the Soldiers of White Love. That's what a fucking general with a head full of, because that's what they always say in the 60s. Like, man, if we had like poet warriors,
man,
if
that's we had, all we need. All we gotta do is put a rose in the barrel of every shotgun.
Yeah, all we gotta do is like, man, if we got General Westmoreland some acid, then man, Vietnam would be a stone groove.
Meanwhile, General Westmoreland just takes a tab of acid. He's like, we gotta make the guns bigger. That's the problem. They gotta be bigger. We'll paint stripes on the guns. Paint stripes on the guns.
And that's as he's eating a cereal out of the bowl of a Vietnamese boy.
Oh, nom, 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 nom. I just like it because their skin makes it salty.
Yeah, Westmoreland was a psychopath.
Yeah.
He was eating it out of the boys?
I'm sure he had a boy skull that he ate breakfast out of.
Oh, I see.
Put a couple of expanders in a butthole, you get some cereal in there. Technically, a serving of cereal is only 3/4 of a cup.
Isn't that something? Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So boot camp for the Soldiers of White Love began in the summer of 1994. And their training ideas, actually pretty novel. The most novel one came when Asahara hired a bunch of homeless dudes from Tokyo and told them that they were going to be extras in a movie called Soldiers of White Love, but they were actually just used as stand-ins for the military resistance that the white lovers were sure to face.
If you're homeless, that's a hell of a gig.
That's
a great gig.
I would take it just a second.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But they get out to the countryside and there's no cameras?
They don't care. They never wanted to be in the movie in the first place. They just couldn't believe someone was asking them to do something.
Just point to a tree and tell them it's a camera.
I'm going to pay you to guard this tree. Yep.
All right.
Tree's still safe.
Just Joe Homos out here.
Yeah. So is there a dookie next to it?
You may.
You are singing my hot song. You're my new best friend, but also my new worst enemy.
Can you go find more quiet homeless?
Yep. I just put this box on my head. I can't hear myself. You can't hear me.
So the squad trained from 8 a.m. till midnight every day with weightlifting, martial arts, and Chinese-style chi exercises. Ooh. And in fact, one admiring member described them as, quote, deeply trained with highly developed muscles.
Yeah, I couldn't help but notice how good and strong your muscles are. I don't know if you maybe see how I developed mine up here in the back of my shoulders. It's mostly because I'm a furniture during the day. I'm Charles.
Are you Charles Ng?
Yeah. How'd you know?
The famous serial killer?
Oh, yeah. Okay, hey, take a joke. You guys are serious. Why is everybody so serious out of town?
It's a suicide call. We're preparing for the end of the world.
No. Gosh, we got Raph a little bit. We got Rex. Got Rex. Okay? Yeah. Now, listen. All right. Why does the walrus like a Tupperware?
Why does a walrus like Tupperware?
Because he's always looking for a tatsier. Why nobody Raph? Why nobody Raph?
Well, I don't.
What I bring to Amshirikia.
It's kind of a serious time for
nobody knows.
Maybe
everybody doubt. Everybody always judge. Well, but me, I should not judgment stand. And I'm right here in check on the grand.
Maybe not the right time, Charles.
So all this was in preparation for what Asahara called X Day, in which the white lovers, all hopped up on sarin antidote, would seize the government following the great helicopter sarin attack. And with the government in chaos, Ohm would stage a coup, establish what they called the Supreme State, and place Shoko Asahara at its helm with the title of Holy Monk Emperor.
Fuck yes. Wow. That is what, if I ever have a production company, if I'm ever executive producer again, that is what people are calling it.
The Holy Monk Empire?
Yes.
Or Emperor?
Yes. Yeah. And I'll everywhere in soft white slippers.
Ooh.
And nothing else.
That's good.
But followers, they were warned in the ramp up to Armageddon. They were, of course, warned Armageddon was going to get a little heavy. See, the white lovers and the sarin attacks were just the beginning. Asahara claimed to have plasma cannons? solar weapons, and vaporization bombs all in production.
And there's actually some of it that is not too far off in their travels to Russia. So Hayawaka was meeting with prominent Russian scientists for help on the cult's laser research. Asahara was obsessed with having a laser weapon. He was obsessed with Nikola Tesla.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He wanted to harness what Tesla said that he could make was a wall of energy that will destroy all humankind, which is intense.
That's cool.
I wonder why he didn't get funding.
Hmm.
But they legitimately met with a man named Nikolai Basov. He's a Nobel Prize winner for his research on laser technology. And from these efforts, Ohm was able to acquire or design various blueprints of imagined laser weapons and the head science officer Murai's attempt to achieve what the guru ordered led to some kind of laser test in October 1994.
That something was witnessed by people.
Something with children of the 80s and early 90s. They loved lasers. Lasers was it for them.
Well, that's what
all
he
they
literally,
could think about.
Because he wanted to be an anime guy.
Yeah,
he wanted
right.
the whole thing to be an anime. He legitimately looked around being like, we need mech warriors. And he's like, yes, I know, but then we have to raise children that are essentially artificial intelligence, designed like human cyborgs that will feed into the mech warriors in order to create a union between man and machine that will not be like the union between God and man. Hello, Evangelion.
Yeah, and one of them's going to be a super annoying German redhead that's going to ruin the whole show
but
for
she's
you.
She's got great breasts
in it. I didn't think she ruined it.
Oh, she is awful.
I love that Evangelion. Anime. It's the only anime I watched.
But that's what he wanted.
Yes.
He didn't understand how difficult that is.
I actually, if he was an author, this would be wonderful.
Yes.
I do give him credit.
This would be an incredible story.
But that's what we're talking about. He made his fiction his life.
Right.
Like, you might say he was a bit of a performance artist.
Also, it's kind of inspiring. It's kind of that thing of being like, go do it. If you want to be right now, we have a lot of people out there that listen to this show that are professional illustrators. They're like, they want to be professional illustrators.
Sure.
People don't want to do. You want to write books.
Whatever you want to do.
Don't dream it. Be it. That's what Asahara should have said.
Yeah, that's what Josh Rogers, who does a lot of art for us. Josh, you can do it.
He is doing it.
I know you're Canadian. But you can still do it.
You are paltry of spirit because of your country. But you can be like an American and do it. Or a Japanese person.
Sure.
So what Asahara was telling people is like, Armageddon's going to get heavy. We've got plasma weapons. We've got laser cannons. But listen up. I've given you all the tools that you're going to need to survive. Those who had reached enlightenment in the cult were blessed with unusually high plasma fields, so the plasma cannons would only add to their power.
Oh, easy.
Interesting.
He also, there was a part of also Om Shinrikyo's design is that they attract a lot of doctors.
Yeah.
And they said that these meditation techniques, which is really interesting here, that they had the doctors after Armageddon, they would be able to take care of everybody. Mm-hmm. And this whole idea of being like, we got plenty of doctors, so we don't have to worry about anything once the end times come.
Right.
And also they believed that because the vaporization bombs that removed all oxygen from the air were fine because Ohm followers already knew shallow breathing techniques through their meditation sessions so they could hold their breath until the effects passed.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, it's not like vaporization bombs actually suck the air out of your lungs or anything like that.
Yeah.
And as far as those solar cannons went, the ones that focus star power to melt everything in their path, those boiling baths, woo!
That's what that was for.
Enhanced heat resistance.
Yeah, it's
that's
like
great.
It's like when you boil a kielbasa before heating it up on the stove.
Sure.
I think that's how that is.
Wow, well, I believe him.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, during all this nuclear war, the world's food supply would almost certainly be destroyed, but Ohm followers, they could survive that just by opening their chakras and lowering their metabolism until the world could be returned to its previous glory.
And if that doesn't work, you can just cut off your fucking feet and eat them.
Eat them. It's so simple.
We're food. We're just food.
God, how would anyone doubt this?
See, I mean, this is common among any religion, any and every religion that has Armageddon weaved into their belief system. They're always told that they're the only ones that are going to survive the coming slaughter. and only their figurehead has all the answers to live through it. It's every single religion that has, because it makes them feel special. That's what keeps them there. That's what keeps them hooked, is this bullshit Armageddon nightmare.
And that's just the positive side of it. It's also a, but the truth is that it's a vague threat as well. Yeah. It's the same thing as the...
Oh, it's not vague. It is very real.
It's a threat of just being also being like, and if you leave, you'll die, and maybe they won't kill you, but I'll kill you.
Yeah.
And then also, it's an abusive relationship technique. It's doing the thing that no one will love you like I love you kind of shit.
I just... 27 sheep.
29,
29! Oh, my God! I thought it was only 27.
You don't remember the numbers.
Well,
speaking of the abusive relationship, is that I read the story of this one woman who had to go through this thing called, like, the Bardo initiation, because Om Shinrikyo, the worst thing that you could do was deny the guru's love. And they actually had a team of people that would bring escapees back. They called them the New Followers Group. And people who would escape again and again, they put them through this thing called, they called the Bardo Initiation.
Where they would meet the Lord of Hell, correct?
Yeah. They called him Mr. Lord of Hell.
Always should.
Yeah. Mr. Lord of Hell, yes.
Mr. Lord, yeah. And it was an initiation which, you know, they'd bring people in, they'd sit them in this tiny room, and a TV screen would come on, and it would start with, like, Asahara cartoon, or no, actually, it would start with, like, a Faces of Death style video where it just showed people getting shot to death. It showed them getting, you know, these like blood on the pavement style car accidents. And then a voice, the Asahara's voice, started saying, "Everybody dies. Everybody will meet their end." And then it would start showing Asahara cartoons.
Oh.
Yeah, and it would start showing Asahara cartoons.
The whole
cartoons.
Time, I literally would just be sitting there going like, "Fuck it! This is fucking metal, man!
I don't think that he would want your love, though. So.
Sign me up!
Can
man,
you please
go.
Get the man who tries to milk me every day out of
Hail
here?
Satan.
You'd be the Hail only Satan. One who gets kicked out of the cult because you annoyed the man so much.
I'm sorry, Miss Sabrowski-san, but you are far too gnarly for Om Shinrikyo.
Oh, they also had a head full of acid this entire
time. That's the whole thing, exactly.
It's a lot.
But then a guy would come out in like a devil costume,
yeah, he'd
right?
come out in a devil costume, and he'd have a huge drum. He'd have a huge drum. And the other thing about Om Shinrikyo, a lot like Scientology, is that they would do confessions, where they would tell people about every bad thing that they'd ever done in their life when they were inducted into the group.
Scientology method as well.
Yeah. So they'd have these guys, this guy that would come out with this big drum, and he would recite their confession, every single thing that they ever said, every bad thing they'd ever done, and he'd keep beating the drum faster and faster and faster and
never,
faster.
Never tell him anything. I was in Catholic school. They wanted me to go confess to this disgusting priest. I didn't tell him nothing.
Yeah, because the whole time he's sucking on a pink fucking icicle, like a popsicle.
Exactly.
But you know what's also weird? A good way to freak people out with a head full of acid in a situation dressed as the devil? Do the thumb trick.
That is kind of
thumb
fun.
Trick, be like, you separate your thumb.
Because people on acid are just toddlers at the end of the day.
Yeah. Got your nose.
Yeah. Give me my nose back.
That is freaky. Don't do that.
Give me my nose
acid.
Back. It's
Don't.
So not metal, bro.
And then after that, they would force the people to get into the lotus position, and they would bound their legs with rope. They would handcuff their hands behind their back, and then they would bend them into the most painful position possible, and then a guy would come in with a big stick, and he'd just start beating on the walls and on the floor. Still,
that just sounds like DDP yoga. I'm in Dallas Page yoga.
What's that hot yoga? Sarananataka?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then finally, after anywhere from 14 hours to 3 days, one guy went through this ritual. They were put in a prison. They put them in like these tiny little rail cars with a ton of other people, and they would be these hot metal boxes, and it was like, you know, the temperature over 100 degrees. Ooh. And not only that, but they would pump hot steam into these containers, and the only privacy they had is that you could go hang out next to the shit bucket, because nobody wanted to hang out next to the shit bucket, and that was the closest thing to privacy.
Except for one guy.
I gotta use the shit bucket, huh? That's cool. Yeah, I just kind of like to be near it all the time.
And that's the thing, is that we're talking about, this is, you know, this abusive relationship, is that this woman, even after she went through the Bardo ritual, that was like the third time she escaped, even after she went through the Bardo ritual, she escaped, she came back on her own volition because she couldn't get the thought of Asahara sending her to hell out of her head. She just couldn't get it out.
I mean, they're mentally ill people.
How does one make love stay?
Actually, no, they're not. They are absolutely not.
This woman sounds like she might.
No, absolutely not. That is insulting. That is very insulting to abuse victims. That is, they are absolutely...
No, not abuse victims. They're talking about Aum Shinrikyo cultists.
No, cultists are not mentally ill people. I think that is a very, very common mistake, and I think that is a very dangerous mistake to make.
They are broken.
Well, I make a lot of... I'm a dangerous guy. I'm a dangerous man.
I think that underestimates the cult. They are broken people, yes. They are grieving people, but they are not mentally ill.
The problem is
some of them are, yes, but they are absolutely
not. Thank you.
Not
some of them are.
Ill.
Thank you very much.
But the problem is that it's mostly when you put yourself in these set of circumstances when you have given up so much control, the idea that you were ever wrong about that is very embarrassing and very hard to come back
from.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
That when you have so fully subjugated yourself to someone else, in order to then believe that you were wrong the entire time means that you essentially gave up years of your life, and the shame and the grief associated with that causes people to stick by these beliefs for a really long time. Because basically, she, in order for her to disbelieve that Asahara is real, then she has to then also take into her mind that she went
was
through
wrong,
the whole, yeah, that she went through the Bardo thing for no reason.
Yeah, and not only
right,
but she brought, you know, she had a family there as well. You know, so not only is she wrong, but she has also wasted her children's life. She has put her children through all of this. The whole belief system is in shambles.
They are deeply flawed.
Yeah.
Everybody involved in this whole thing is just flawed and fucked up.
Well, yeah,
up.
They're trying to murder thousands and millions of people.
That's the thing.
Yeah, yeah, but
that's
those,
the big
but
thing.
But that's the thing, is that this woman, this woman had no idea that any of that was
going on. No, she was actually, it was actually sadder on her end because she wasn't a part of the big nefarious world domination plans. If she was a part of that, I understand why the rest of them were creepily, like the 10% that were creepily devoted to Asahara. I know why they are because they are also being like, we'll get a cut of the pie. We're going to be a part of the winning 10%. Like he'll include us in the celebration party.
Yeah, yeah.
But everyone else was expendable.
Yeah, Destro's all about Cobra Commander getting to the top
because he thinks he'll be able to hang out.
Yeah.
In a conference room, we just understand Cobra Commander's probably going to fucking blow his brains out.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Are we sure about the exactly? That's fine.
So by the end of 1994, Aum Supreme Truth would have over 40,000 followers in over 30 branches in at least 6 countries. Their weapon stockpile had reached super villain proportions, and the connections they had made extended all the way to the Yakuza. If you don't know who the Yakuza is, they are a worldwide criminal enterprise filled with the baddest motherfuckers Japan has to offer.
They're like the Mafia times 10.
Yeah.
And in Japan, they're incredibly important because they're fully involved in business. And I'm certain that what it comes down to it is that, like, what we have here is that they do have a concrete connection because the Kyori Nakata, the high-level Yakuza master, joined Aum Shinrikyo after a fatal liver disease diagnosis was supposedly reversed by miracles worked by the cult, right?
Yeah.
But also...
That was their end.
But a part of it, too, is that... They, because they were involved in big business, they could not be involved in big business without being involved with the Yakuza.
Absolutely.
So at some point, Yakuza members are going to show up and be like, so what's this operation? Like, we know everything that you have. We know that you got this helicopter. And it's like, so what are you doing? You have to cut us into it now.
Yeah, but this also tells you another thing about Aum, is that the first time that Yakuza went and talked to Aum Shinrikyo, sent these bad motherfuckers out there, the Aum members beat the fuck out of them.
Woo.
Like, they went against the Yakuza, and they won. So Asahara and Aum Shinrikyo actually did have... So because the soldiers of White Love, these guys were... they were members of Japan's elite defense force.
But they were mercenaries.
Also mercenaries. They were hired goons. No, they weren't. They were people that were in the military that voluntarily became a part of Aum Shinrikyo and veterans as well. These are people, they were not hired goons. They were people that joined Asahara voluntarily because they believed in him.
That's not good.
Hey, you gotta believe in something.
I'm so glad all this is in the past.
You know what I mean? It's not happening now at all.
This is like one of those things I'm so happy that this is done with.
Like, it's not like there's an organization called ISIS that's almost exactly like Aum Shinrikyo.
Oh, we made them, and we'll turn them off and turn them on every time we want.
It's the second time it's come up, but I can't even get into it.
So it's through this man that Aum, this guy, Kyode Nakata, it was through this man that Aum would finally have the connections to the underworld that they would need to procure small arms, as the AK-47 factory, not not surprisingly, a little slow going.
Weird.
Yeah, strange. To build 1,000 AK-47s from scratch.
It's hard for someone to get one of those, like, weird embroidery Etsy things going. Yeah. Never mind a fucking AK-47 yeah. factory.
Why didn't they just stop by a Walmart when they were in Florida? I mean, there's so many damn guys. I just don't even understand the problem.
So over the course of four deals, Nakata secured 18 handguns for the Ohm cult, which is a big deal in a country with as strict a gun laws as Japan has. They have ridiculously strict gun laws. Mm. But perhaps more impressively than that, Nakata was also able to secure 20 hand grenades from a shady Chinese gang.
Awesome. We don't really know anything else.
No, that's it. Shady Chinese gang.
I'm glad. Yeah, what are you going to say? Like a really cool, seemingly innocent Chinese gang.
These seem like fairly petty deals, though, considering they got a helicopter from the Russians.
Yeah, they do. They have a helicopter. You know, they have all these chemical weapons, but they're trying real hard to get these ground troops trained.
Yeah.
So Nakata also introduced Ohm through the Yakuza to the wonders of insurance fraud. See, when an Ohm member joined the cult and signed away all their assets, that, of course, included any and all life insurance policies that the initiate may have had. And after that, it wasn't hard to make accidents happen around the compound or for elderly members to suddenly up and die in one of the horrific makeshift hospitals, which we'll get into on a future bonus episode.
They just made their own hospitals. Yeah. And there's a lot of things that
it's
I'm
like
into.
MASH.
I like, you know, yeah, I love farmers markets.
Right.
I like, you know, farm to table stuff. I like indie things, like
hey,
indie
man,
films.
Here at CCR, we are 100% DIY. We're the fucking DIY network, man. We fucking love DIY.
You know
shit.
What I could use well, for actually, things to not be DIY is a hospital.
Yeah. You take care of that. You build that. Right.
I don't want you, if you couldn't make it as a stand up and then you decide, oh, I want to be a doctor and now right. I'm a doctor. That's not how that's going to work.
No. That's illegal.
Yeah, and Ohm also made a pretty penny selling drugs to the Yakuza, even though their product was known as the worst shit on the market, except for their acid. See, their acid was fucking great, but acid never really caught on in Japan.
Can you think about how good anime would have been, though?
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's interesting that it didn't catch on in Japan. It's video games and
they're
anime.
They're very creative.
Yeah, they're already a creative people.
Oh,
yeah,
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
They had their own kind of version of the 60s, and they created some amazing psychedelic music, but they kind of did it without drugs. They're on the level, man.
Well, they had a 1960s.
I mean, like
we all did. Technically, all
world had a
1960s.
Yeah, when you think literally, as you do. But come on, man. I'm thinking in the psychedelic realm. Talk about music. I'm talking about a movement, man.
Get with the feelings,
yeah,
bro.
It's like you don't even know Dr. Buzz.
I know
Dr. Buzz.
Oh, man. Well, you know what you need to do, man, is put cannabis oil in your shoes, man, because you're too groovy to be sick. Man, I'm fucking... I think I got 102 temperature. Man, that's just your fucking prerogative, dude.
It's just your fucking journey. But, you know, the acid, it was the great... Acid was great. But, you know, they were also making PCP. They were also making meth. But everyone, like the Yakuza and all the drug users, they called it Ohm stuff because it was super dirt.
How do they mess up meth?
It was super dirty, super impure. Like, yeah, you've seen Breaking Bad. Like, you know how Cranston stuff is like the purest shit around?
But they made sarin gas.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean,
how do you mess up meth?
Because they were focusing on the sarin gas. The meth was just like a side project.
Do what you love.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Follow your heart.
That's right.
Yeah. Nevertheless, by the end of 1994, Ohm was operating what many believe was the largest underground drug manufacturing operation in the entire world.
Yikes.
And Nakata was also in the process of negotiating the hiring of several Yakuza members to fight alongside the White Lovers when X Day finally came. But fortunately for the people of Japan, Ohm would make a mistake that would finally give Japanese cops the concrete excuse they've been looking for, and Harumageddon would have to come early.
That's the thing that's really scary is that Harumageddon can always come early. Why is that true?
Harumageddon could come in like the next hour.
Wow. All right. Shinrikyo, part three. Amazing. Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah, this stuff is really like this episode is when you really see Shinrikyo for not just like the weird Heaven's Gate, Jonestown, Waco type of cult. You know, right. you see these guys for the true terroristic threat that they actually are. And I truly do believe that you can compare Om Shinrikyo. Like, Om Shinrikyo was like the precursor to ISIS, to people like that, to these death cults. ISIS just got a hold of the weapons. If Om Shinrikyo would have got a hold of the weapons, they could have become an ISIS. They could have become that sort of threat.
Truly becoming a war, like an actual enemy war machine. It's
yeah.
like
yeah,
a thing.
Real terrorist group.
It's very interesting. You look at it and you just realize, the more I read about it, is that they just how dangerous they were,
right,
and just how big it got.
Yeah. Without the internet.
But yeah. Without the internet, and also yeah. because the government did not interfere whatsoever. They weren't getting checked at all, and
right.
so they were just doing all this shit, and I can imagine, can you imagine being the Japanese police finally showing up, like once the whole thing's said and done, and then looking at them and like, holy fuck.
We should have gotten on this a lot earlier, guys.
Well, the Japanese police, that was their whole thing, is that they kept saying, it's like, well, that, like when someone would go missing, because
like,
because dozens of people would go missing, and they
right.
and the people would say, like the families were like, hey, listen, I think this Om Shinrikyo people fucking kidnapped and killed my daughter.
Yeah, get
and,
out of here.
And the Japanese police was like, well, that's interesting, but it's not concrete enough.
We need evidence.
Yeah, they needed hard evidence. That's what they said, is that they wouldn't, because also like they were kind of in business, they were in business with the Yakuza as well, and the Yakuza kind of act as an unofficial police force in Japan. If something happens,
figured like if it was really fucked up,
yeah.
the Yakuza would stop it.
Yeah.
And I'm certain that the Yakuza was getting them weapons and stuff, but kind of just considering them another gang.
Yeah.
I'm certain they're looking at these guys and kind of being like, we'll get them weapons and shit, but we'll probably only get them only 20 weapons because we have all the rest of the weapons, and if we ever need to fucking kill these people, we need to make sure we can kill them. Probably not really knowing that they had fucking 70 tons of sarin gas that they were trying to make.
No, absolutely not. No, they were just another gang, and one that was making the Yakuza money. So.
Don't trust anybody on motorcycles.
Except for my dad. My dad was cool on motorcycles.
Well, I'm sure he wasn't on a Yakuza type motorcycle.
No, you had a hole.
What are those called? The fast ones.
The crotch rockets.
The crotch rockets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Don't trust them.
No, but a dude on a hog?
Yeah, you trust
man.
Him.
Yeah.
I mean, you could sort of trust him.
Kinda. Not with
if
your
you're
wife
another
or
grown male. If you're another
yeah,
grown
yeah, yeah,
male,
yeah.
you can trust them. Don't ever trust them if you're a young man or woman or a woman.
Or yeah. go read Hell's Angels by Hunter S. Thompson. You might not trust a guy on a hog all
don't
that
trust
much.
Anyone.
Actually, don't ever trust
yeah,
anybody.
Yeah, you know what? I've come full circle. Yeah, don't even if they're in a car, don't trust them. Vans, don't
walking
trust them.
Walking on the street, don't talk to them.
Airplane, yeah.
Yeah, but you can always trust us.
You yes. can always trust us, and my God, if you do need, if you are sad about the 29 sheep, reach out. We will mourn together.
Also, just remember that if you listen to last podcast on the left, and if you're one of the true elite that have given us a 5-star review on iTunes, is that when the Armageddon comes,
yeah.
when the end times comes, we will be safe. You are the only ones who are safe.
You yeah, will also, we will die.
But
no,
safe
no, no,
in
no.
the spirit
if,
world.
If you listen back, starting at around episode 73 or 74, starting around Toy Box Killer or BTK, I began to weave a secret message throughout
really
that I've been
listen.
Working on for a few years. And if you really listen. Then if you really
yeah.
listen, then only you are able to have the secret on how to survive the
upcoming
apocalypse.
So you are actively asking people who might be more
vulnerably mentally.
Yes.
yes.
To lose their minds.
Yes.
Satire.
Okay. All right.
Satire.
Very good.
I've never been able to use that excuse before. I
See,
like it.
Is it a fun?
It's
is it a nice?
It's kind of free,
it
right?
It is satire.
Because
yeah,
everything's satire.
Everything is satire.
As long as you say it's satire.
Everything we do is satire. Awesome, guys. Thanks so much for listening. And listen to the other shows. We mentioned Page 7.
Yeah.
Able Against Top Hat, Roundtable of Gentlemen, and
Sex and Other Human Activities.
And The Lucky Bone Show.
Yeah, The Lucky Bone Show. Mixcloud.com/Marcus Parks.
I'm going to ask you guys, I don't like to ask dumb shit like this, but this is a thing that I that actually means a lot to me. Heroes Reborn Dark Matters has been nominated for a Webby for Best Dramatic Series, and if you want to go and vote for us, that would be awesome.
I did it.
That would be really awesome.
Where do they go for that? Webby Awards?
The Webby Awards.
Cool.
I don't I don't know.
Even
I think
if
it's
you didn't
webby.com.
Like, just close your eyes.
Just close your eyes and
click
do the
it.
Thing. I'm actually really proud of the Dark Matters series. I think it came
great.
Out really good.
Well, you improv'd a lot. lot of that, didn't you?
I improvised all my dialogue. It's like one of those things where improv. We won a WGA award for the writing of it, which is my improv.
Right, right.
But
right.
That's fine. It's always that that's way, fine. It? But it's like just comment. Just please vote for it. That would be really awesome. We're in second place right now, and if we win it, apparently we're getting close to an Emmy nomination.
Nice.
So if that could happen, this would push it. So come
that
on,
that would be great.
I can whip it.
Do
whip
it. Do it for all of us. Do it for me.
Do it for me.
Do it for me. And follow me on Instagram at Dr. Fantasty and at LP on the left.
Very cool. And follow me on Instagram at Marcus Parks.
I'm at Ben Kissel on Twitter. I don't do Instagram. but I did just download the Bitmoji app.
Yeah, that's what we were doing. So we've been sending Bitmoji.
We're all pretty obsessed
with
Bitmoji.
Fun. So I'm next step Instagram.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, also thanks again to everyone at Midtown Scholar for sending us all of these amazing books. We're also going to be getting a lot of help from Midtown on research. They've started doing fucking research with us, which we're really going to get into on the next episode.
There are renunciants.
We got to thank this guy. I walked into the office today, and Marcus is wearing a very fancy pair of sunglasses.
Rudy.
Yeah,
thank you. Thank you to let's see here, Devin Johnson, works for this company called the Rudy Project, and they sent us like a bunch of fucking awesome swag.
Thank you for swag.
Yeah,
and
thank
also
you.
this shampoo to get grit out of your hair.
Which was kind of an insult, I have to say. I've never had a piece of grit in my hair.
Oh no, you need grit in your hair.
I don't work hard.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and the guy that sent us the awesome anti-grit shampoo, his name is Chris Hickman. I used it last night, or I used it night before last. I only wash my hair like once every 2 weeks. I used it night before.
What?
No, it's fine, doesn't.
It's okay. You just move on.
You just move on. Don't even think about it. Don't
once every 2 weeks.
Yeah,
seems
yeah.
Like
you're
a lot.
not supposed to wash your hair all the time.
Yeah, but
that's how you lose your hair. You're not supposed to. It damages your hair.
I don't know if that's true either.
It's absolutely
seems like a lot of myths for
people.
It's totally
skate right on over that.
Very true. But anyways, I used it. My hair is bouncy and fluffy. And you know what? Summer Rudy.
I'm gonna remove my thank you to Devin.
Rudy.
Devin, you caused all of this.
RudyProject.com. It's like if you're a workout person, like I know some of you guys.
I'm doing
a workout person.
I am
a workout person.
It's a triathlete thing.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of these workout people, they listen to our show while they work out, and they've got like a bunch of cool shit over there. So,
I tell you what, I'm doing Summer of Japanese Whiskey. That's my thing.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, yeah, very nice.
No, definitely do that.
Oh, and Japanese if you, by the way, if you want to give to our Patreon at patreon.com/lastpodcast on the left, thank you guys so much for all of your support. And if you want a Last Podcast on the Left T-shirt, go to cavecomedyradio.com/merch. And I seriously could not tell you guys are the most supportive fans in the world. I just felt like saying it. Our Facebook group is like 12,000 people now. Like, you guys really are the best, most supportive, most awesome fans in the entire fucking world. You guys are great. We don't say it enough, but you guys are fucking amazing.
Me love you at wrong time.
When we get to 15,000, then we'll go on to phase two. So
phase two will be discussed at 15,000.
So interesting.
But if you listen throughout the episodes,
you already know what phase two is.
You already know what phase two is. If you're listening real closely.
If you really listen.
Don't drive him crazy.
Every ninth word.
Alright.
Just think about that.
Every ninth word. Hail yourselves.
Hail Geed.
Hail Satan. And hail me.
And Megustalations.
Megustalations, one and all.
Don't shit yourself today, alright? Just avoid it. Just fucking make the toilet.
For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to cavecomedyradio.com.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.